I was at a mastermind with somebody who's like a big like YouTube organic person who's great at YouTube organic. He was saying absolutely never run YouTube ads to promote any video. And I was saying, well, you know, here's where we agree, but also here's where we disagree with these in-feed ads, right? You can run in-feed ads and then it's just amplifying what your video
your
would do already. And we've seen across clients, right? It's like, as long as you have your watch time be strong there and you got to monitor that, then it's going to help it. So it's just amplifying the number of impressions you can get.
Sure.
And then it's up to the video's merits how that's going to help or harm your channel.
Welcome back to the show. I'm Travis Chappell, and I believe that if you can connect with the best, you can become the best. So after creating 800 podcast episodes about building your network, I've come to realize that networking is really just making friends, if you're doing it the right way anyway. Join me as I make friends with world-class athletes like Shaquille O'Neal, entertainers like Rob Dyrdek, authors like Dr. Nicole LaPera, former presidents like Vicente Fox, or even the occasional FBI hostage negotiator, billionaire real estate mogul, or polarizing political figure. So if you want to make more friends that help you become a better version of yourself, then subscribe to the show and keep on listening, because this is Travis Makes Friends. What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Travis Makes Friends podcast. Today, I am making friends with Alaric Heck. Alaric, what's up, dude? Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me on. I'm excited.
Yes, sir. For those who do not know, this guy is really like the king of YouTube ads inside of the online marketing space. If you are familiar with anybody that does online marketing, internet marketing, the Dean Graziosi's, Grant Cardone's, all these people that are buying advertisements that you are forced to watch all the time, probably all of them, if not all of them, have at least consulted with, paid, or worked with Alaric and his team in some way. When I say he's the master of YouTube ads, I genuinely mean that. And his team has generated almost $30 million in online sales in the last few years. So the guy knows what he's talking about. So I'm stoked to jump into a conversation. Yeah, welcome to the show, man. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me on. I'm excited.
Yeah, we're here in beautiful Austin. It is really hot right now.
Yes, very hot.
Yeah, which is weird because I say that as a Vegas resident. And I actually came here and it's hotter here than it was in Vegas, which is rare. It's hard to beat Vegas's heat in the middle of summer, but we did get a storm in recently. You know, it's only like 90 something there. It's only like 95 here. It's like
exactly.
105.
It was the same thing. I was at an event in Cabo and I came back here. And it was warmer here than in Cabo. You're like, this is not how it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be warmer in Mexico. But anyways, it's funny.
It is what it is, man. Yeah. It is what it is. Well, let's rewind the clock, bro. I know that you've been doing this for a little while, but you got your start just being a YouTube creator. And it's really interesting for me because a buddy of mine, Chris Van Vliet, him and I are starting this kind of education program to help creators go full-time, to help creators learn more about how to make money and actually grow their content and things. So I'm really interested to talk to you about those things. However, I want to go back even further in time because I always find the path or the journey interesting. On the show, we talk to a lot of different people from a lot of different backgrounds who do a lot of different cool things. But the thing that everybody has in common is that nobody I've ever interviewed took the traditional path. And like just like went down and got their degree and did this thing and then went and worked on Wall Street. And now they're, you know, a hedge fund man. Like everybody I talk to is just has this really interesting, unique way of how they got there. None of them were writing on their like, you know, fourth grade homework of what they want to be when they grow up. You know what I mean? I want to be a YouTube ads expert or coach or whatever. You know what I mean? Let's go back. Let's say 9-year-old Alaric. Tell me about like family life. Set the scene for us. Where were you? What was life like for 9-year-old you?
Yeah. So I was in Chelmsford, Massachusetts. So kind of a suburb outside of Boston. Okay. And I remember, you know, growing up, I was always like fascinated with video, right? And I had like a video camera. We kind of, you know, upper middle class, you know, kind of upbringing. And so I think that there's definitely a good kind of degree of entrepreneurship that can be bred, especially, you know, kind of in that area. We kind of went from like middle class to upper middle class during like, well, as I was growing up. And so we had enough to be able to just, we didn't have to worry about that. But it also was, we knew that there was more. I knew that there was more out there, and I wanted to aspire to build, you know, kind of these bigger things.
What did your parents do?
My father was software engineer at Oracle, and my mom raised us, and then she became a preschool teacher.
Okay.
She actually just released a book on a children's book on becoming the best version of yourself. Called,
oh, nice.
Yeah, enough, like a best self adventure. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
She so some YouTube ads to launch that. Or?
Oh, we're diving in. She just launched it, so we've already got some Amazon ads up, and we're actually building out, I'm having her do like a read aloud video, and we're going to run that on YouTube as well.
Nice, cool.
Yeah. But that also kind of shows to how my upbringing was, is that I learned from my father, you know, to be really diligent, work hard. And I learned from my mother, you know, that it was kind of that combination of that I'm enough as I am, but also to strive to be the best version of myself. And it's actually pretty cool, like full circle, that she kind of wrote a children's book on that. But basically, that was kind of what I was inspired by is, you know, how can I become the best version of myself? But I did have, you know, really loving and supporting, you know, family.
Seems like you got a little bit of influence on both like the IQ and the EQ. You know,
yes.
Like to be a preschool teacher, you have to have very high emotional intelligence.
Yes.
You know, like I can't imagine doing that as a job.
Yeah.
and props and thank you so much to all of you preschool teachers out there for taking, you know, for molding the next generation for the rest of us. We appreciate you. But the high degree emotional intelligence, but then for your dad to be a software engineer for Oracle, assumingly a high degree of IQ as well. And you kind of got that, you know, yin and yang a little bit from both your parents.
Exactly. And they were always really supportive, but at the same time, they weren't entrepreneurs themselves. And so what I was looking for as I was kind of creating different things is figuring out like, what can I do to build a different path? And so I think that's where they were really supportive in that area of me going out and, you know, kind of really figuring out how I wanted to do my different entrepreneurship and different ventures. I even remember when I was young, like even when I was 9, I had a lemonade stand. It's a classic entrepreneur story. I'm sure people watching can resonate with it. But I had this lemonade stand to kind of give a good picture of like where we were at growing up is we were able to be on the street with the swim and tennis club, but we didn't belong to that club. Right. So it was kind of like that's kind of like where we were at and that type of thing. And so on that street, there were a lot of people that are just walking up and down, you know, during the summer to go swim. And I would set up my lemonade stand there. And I remember my parents taught me from a young age, too, the importance of profit, not just revenue. So I remember the first time I was a little confused. They're like, well, this is the money that's going towards the supplies. And it was a really valuable lesson, right?
Sure.
Because
it's
like, hey, this is what
these
actually went in. There's real costs. And I'm so grateful for that. And when I was a kid, I was like, wait, what's going on? You know, but now I'm so grateful for that lesson because it's like, well, this is what you put into buying these things.
Right.
And you made more than that. That's your, and the difference is your profit. And so I remember learning that from a young age too. And one of my early memories of kind of marketing and without even really knowing it is I had that lemonade stand. I just happened to be in kind of a good street to sell lemonade. And I was doing it, you know, during the summer. Sometimes I'd be out there every day and definitely, you know, on the weekends and everything, I would be selling my lemonade. And I remember in the fall came and not as many people were walking down the street, right? They either weren't going to swim or if they were going to play tennis, they were driving in. I didn't have as many people, but I wanted to sell my lemonade on the weekends. And so I was trying to figure out, okay, where do I go to be able to sell this lemonade? And then the idea struck me. I didn't even realize I was kind of marketing at the time, but I was thinking, well, where do people go in the fall?
Where's the traffic?
They go to yard sales and garage sales. And so what I did was I, you know, saw in the paper, all right, here's where all the yard sales and garage sales are like on my street. I would go knock on their door, which I had some experience because I was, you know, in the Boy Scouts and I would sell like popcorn and stuff door to door. So I'd knock on their door and say, hey, saw you, I got a, you know, garage sale. Can I sell my like lemonade at your sale? Like
smart.
You can have as much lemonade as you want and then people will stay longer. And so I didn't even really realize that, you know, I was kind of learning about marketing and joint ventures. And so that's probably one of my earlier memories of diving into that. And my parents were always really supportive in all of that side of things. And you know, as a kid having kind of the lemonade stand, the classic classic story.
Were you kind of a big education family? I would assume,
yes.
You know, software engineer and teacher as parents? Like
they're
very much hardcore about like, you got to go get an education type of thing.
Very, very much. And I'll actually get into that too, because, you know, I did go through, I got my, you know, full college degree and I'll get into like, while I was still building my businesses. So I'll get into that as we get later in the story. But, you know, also as we dive into here, that was definitely something growing up is that I really had this kind of very big kind of focus on education. And I think that that was something that I also was a little self-conscious about. My brother would always like, you know, probably ace like, you know, all the different tests and things. And just for context.
So your brother would excel in that setting.
Yeah, younger brother. And for context, just so you have the picture, he's now doing his PhD at Stanford. So he's doing like, he went a totally different, the other track, right? Yeah. The very academic, physical chemistry, incredible. I don't even fully understand all the things that he talks
about.
Don't
even try to explain it.
Yeah, he's incredibly smart. And you know, he would always be doing that. And there was definitely, you know, pressure on my side to also do similar, you know, academically.
Sure.
And I think that's one thing that if there's somebody watching who's maybe on the younger side, but I remember in high school, I had this pressure to take all of the honors classes. And I was smart enough and able to get into all those classes, right? But the thing is, I loved kind of problem solving. I learned this later on. It's like the business side of it. The business smarts and the test, like test taking and all those different things, I actually can do really well, but not like perfect. I didn't have like a, you know, a perfect like photographic memory. I kind of excel more in problem solving. And so what I found was I took all of those different classes. All of a sudden, I was prior to that like kind of top of the class. But once I took all kind of honors and AP classes, I became kind of an average like honor student, which was kind of, you know, so obviously still in those classes, but you know, that's where I was getting, you know, not just A's, but also B's and like some of those other things. And so there definitely was some pressure growing up around that side of it.
Yeah. I mean, how could there not be? The thing is, like, when you're growing up, there's not many other things to measure your like success by. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, school's like the only thing, because that's your job.
Yeah.
Every kid's job is being at school. We make this mistake of judging kids based off of their academic excellence when it only is built to reward the one type of learner or student that excels in that particular vein. It's good that you are doing other things outside of that to build confidence. Not to say, like, obviously you were still a good student to be getting A's and B's and honors classes and stuff. But I think there's a lot of kids out there that just, they take such a hit in their confidence level because they compare themselves to all these other kids or siblings who are doing better in school. And it's just not an indication of whether or not you're going to be successful. And at least in 2023 or in 2000 and beyond, you know what I mean? Maybe it mattered in 1950 or whatever, when you needed good test scores and you needed to go to college. And there weren't many people with bachelor degrees and you could get the best job and it paid a little bit better, you know, but now like it's just diminishing returns at this point, when you have like the average college degree being five or six times what it was in 1950 or 10 times what it was in 1950. And then the average starting salary of a college graduate declining from 2000. You know what I mean? It's like, well, where do we like make up this discrepancy? You know what I mean? So it's good that you had these kind of external factors like lemonade stands, different things like that that you're working on, that enabled you to be like, even if like my brother does this path better than, like, it doesn't mean that I can't do this other thing in this other context. What did you end up going to college for?
Yeah. Well, and actually even before that, so my YouTube channel, I actually started that when I was 12. So yeah. And, you know, I got an earlier start on that. And, you know, prior to that, I had that lemonade stand. So I had developed entrepreneurship and a desire for that. But I also was filming videos with friends. I had a video camera. I loved it. I taught myself at an early age how to like edit on Adobe, like Premiere, like Premiere, back when you'd load in all like the, you know, the CS like discs and stuff into the computer. And, and I remember learning how to edit and learning that element of it. And back in July of 2009, like 14 years ago, YouTube was such a new platform, only a few years old.
That was like when, that was basically when all that was on YouTube was like Charlie Bit My Finger.
Yeah, and, exactly. Like, you know, exactly.
It was like you only went to YouTube for like these seven viral videos. And like that was basically all of YouTube.
Exactly. And so I got in really early and I was able to create videos on mobile app reviews, tech tutorials, teaching people how to use their iPhone. It just started off as, you know, showing the best mobile apps.
Which was also brand new at the time.
I had just gotten, exactly. And it wasn't even, the funny thing is, it wasn't even an iPhone at that time. It was an iPod Touch.
I was going to say, I think I got my first iPhone in 2009, 2010, like somewhere. I graduated high school in 2010.
Yeah.
And my senior year, I remember I had a landscaping business. That was my first thing after selling a bunch of stuff in elementary school. But my landscaping business, I felt like I was balling because I got to buy my own iPhone. And I was like, I had the cool apps on my phone, like the cool games.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what was that one? Doodle Jump.
Doodle Jump.
All the good ones back in the day. So you're doing mobile app reviews and like tech reviews and stuff like that on your YouTube channel.
And I loved, when I got it, it's the exact same thing. Everybody, especially if you think back then, everybody wanted to show off. If you had one of these iPhone
tap, or revenge.
Here's all the, I know all the ones you're talking about. And so what I would do is I would show all the best mobile apps, all the best games. And I started to post that on the channel and I was getting thousands of views and then tens of thousands of views. And people were just watching these because at the time also everything cost money, right? So it was like, you want to buy Doodle Jump, 99 cents. Well, how good is it? You know, and if people were looking that up and even if they were looking up on Google, the YouTube video would appear. And so people would then click on it. They'd watch it. And, you know, I was talking about it.
So you were making a little bit of money from monetization at that point.
It did
right?
take a couple years to get. So that was when you had to apply for the YouTube partner program. So I actually had to apply. I got denied three times before I actually got approved. So it's another, like, you know, if somebody says no, just keep trying, just keep going back.
You know, what's funny is, like, I think that was the first time I ever learned the word monetization. Mm-hmm. It was when, like, a couple buddies of mine and I were, like, looking at YouTube and trying to do stuff, and I saw that word, and I was like, I don't know what that means.
Yeah.
That's a big word.
You know,
I mean, I had to look it up and figure out, like, what is monetize? What does that even mean? You know what I mean? That's a long time ago, man.
Yeah. And I remember I did get monetized, and the channel really started to take off. It really took off when I started teaching people how to use their iPhone.
Okay.
So that's actually something I'm really, you know, proud of doing, is I've made complete beginner's guides. So full hour-long video, A to Z, how to use your iPhone. And around the iPhone 4 is when it really started to take off.
Right when Siri started coming out?
Yes. And those videos got millions of views.
Wow.
So my iPhone 7 beginner's guide video is my most popular video. It's got over 8 million views. And it's an hour long. And the average watch time on that is like over 20 minutes. So people are watching a good degree of this video.
And made a good amount of money.
It made a good amount of money. And so by the time I was in, you know, I think a sophomore in high school, I remember I was making around like $60,000 a year from the YouTube channel.
What are your parents saying about that at this point?
I think that it's kind of interesting. So they're always really supportive and they're impressed. I think they thought that it may pass, or they also didn't want me to. I think that what they were nervous about now, this is in hindsight, right? I think they were nervous about me, you know, potentially not focusing on school or dropping out or not going to college and then having it not work out.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I think that's also why at the time I felt like they were always supportive, but I also kind of felt like they didn't see the longevity of it.
Yeah, right.
And
I mean, totally understandable.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, if you're a parent and you're looking at your kid and it's like, wait, you're doing what? You made how much? It sounds like a fad or whatever. You know, it's like, okay, cool. Do that if you want, but also you need to do this.
Yes, yes. Exactly. And so that was kind of the mentality there. But at the same time, it was bringing in, you know, real money. And I think also part of it, too, is they were also, you know, they were definitely excited because what they were seeing this as, this is great. This is going to be great to also help you get into college and get, like, they were thinking about this as like almost like a resume item.
Sure, sure.
And there was definitely truth to that, too, in terms of getting into, you know, like you can go into college and stuff. Mm-hmm. And paying for college and helping with that as well.
Yeah.
And at the same time, I knew I wanted to build something bigger. So now, you know, so I went to UMass Amherst, so went to the Eisenberg School of Management, and I did go for marketing. And there's a lot of valuable principles I learned there. I think I was definitely learning more like building my business and doing my own marketing, of course. I really fondly look back at my time there. I ran the entrepreneurship club there, and that's kind of like, you know, and I put some things in place and kind of grew it to a size that still, you know, kind of to this day continues to support entrepreneurship, like real entrepreneurship too. That was the thing. Like when I got there was a few people that wanted to really like make entrepreneurship a bigger thing on campus. And I think that one of the things was there was kind of this push for more of the academic thought around entrepreneurship versus the actual doing.
And I was very
much on the doing side. Let's get people in here,
the philosophy, actually being a practitioner.
And you know, doing different things like U-Launch, which was an event that I created. They're kind of modeled after, you know, Startup Weekend and 3-day Startup, but essentially, you know, launching your business over the course of a weekend and having that be something that the university does. It's funny, they send me these like alumni packets because I've donated a few times to the Entrepreneurship Club. Like, so they send me these alumni packets, and inside they have the U-Launch event. I'm like, ooh, highlighting
still,
it. I'm like,
still have it.
That's,
huh?
I'm like, that's, there you go. That's,
nice.
That's kind of the legacy there. But basically when I got to college, I remember immediately wanted to systematize and turn my YouTube channel into a business because I was determined to have this be what I did when I graduated from college or something along these lines.
Where you didn't have to go apply.
Exactly.
For jobs.
And so because I was even, this stopped after my freshman year, after my business really started to take off, but I was even having some pressure about, okay, what are your freshman summer? Are you going to do an internship? I'm like, I'm doing my business. I've got my business.
Yes, meanwhile, I am.
I have,
for me.
Yeah, for me.
Yeah.
I have my business doing.
I'm
going to
work
for
free for somebody.
Yeah,
it's going to
exactly.
be me.
And it's funny because I was already bringing in like six figures a year from my low six figures at that time for my YouTube channel. So for monetization, so I had a few different ways I was monetizing. So I systematized it my freshman year of college, where I had YouTube ad revenue, like monetization, which was in the 60 to 100,000, you know, a year kind of territory. And that was the bulk of it. But also I had sponsorships, so direct sponsorships, apps reaching out saying, hey, we want to feature, you know, inside these different videos. the channel, we did over 300 sponsorships over the, you know, wow. And it's still, I still actually, and I can get to this later. I still have the channel. I've got we hired a content person in California to do it now. But basically I was able to systematize the channel where I got a, and these were all just kind of college students that I found through my entrepreneurship club. And so somebody to write the scripts, somebody to edit the videos.
Got your own interns.
Somebody to do business development, reply to the emails. At one point, we were getting 50 to 100 emails a day with people that wanted to feature their app on the channel, which was crazy. And then a small percentage of those would turn into sponsorship deals, essentially. So we would go back and forth with them. And then the other revenue source was affiliate marketing.
Okay.
So one thing that I learned is, well, wait a second, if I'm teaching people how to use their phone and download an app, what if I show them how to download a sponsored app?
Sure.
And, you know, disclose that it's sponsored, but, you know, what's an app that they would all like? One of the early, you know, kind of affiliate deals I did was an app, it was like Ibotta. So it was grocery, like coupons, like, and it was perfect because that was the exact demographic, the people that were watching it, you know, like these were people that probably were going grocery shopping and probably want to save on their bill, and they could go and download this app. And it was an easy sell because I'm teaching them how to download an app using my affiliate link and telling them that this app is only going to save them money and earn them cash back. And then I get my, you know, so it was great. And so I systematized the whole process
right there.
Exactly. And so I systematized the whole process, and I had the whole YouTube channel down to a science where I had the script writers, the video editors, the business development, and I kind of was just the face and voice, and I would come in, and also the strategy. And so I was able to systematize that to essentially, and I remember reading 4-Hour Workweek, and I systematized it to essentially be roughly a 4-Hour Workweek in terms of what I was doing on the YouTube channel. I also was a full-time student, but I knew that I had some more time because I was just crazy, and I wanted to build the next business. And so that's where the next business kind of came apparent to me. And I think this is really valuable for, you know, anybody who's listening too, is that sometimes you just have to look for what's that next opportunity, right? And so—
How can you use your existing skill set, the things you've already been working on, the knowledge that you have to go vertical? Because I feel like that's a mistake I see a lot of people make when they're starting their second business or their second income stream for their first business, is they go completely outside of the realm. It's like you're doing YouTube and creator stuff and affiliates and sponsorships, and then you go start a lawn mowing business or something. It's like, whoa, wait a second.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, can you? Yeah, sure. But why?
Something
that uses the things that you've been learning over the last 4 years of working on this business to move into this like adjacent business where customers, clients, and everything is kind of intertwined, right?
Yeah. And when you have a big opportunity too, and just also trusting that, you know, if you're going in and you're really refining and honing your skills and you're doing whatever that business or side hustle or whatever it is, that there is going to be a golden opportunity. You just have to keep your eyes open for it and then seize it when it comes. And that's what happened. And this was still my kind of the second half of my freshman year of college. What ended up happening is there was a mobile app. This was like a social media networking app. They hired us to do, or paid us a sponsorship fee to do a video. They got a bunch of downloads, I think like 1,000 downloads, something like that. And they're like, this is great. Can you post the same video tomorrow? Like, we want to run the same video to your channel tomorrow and double the downloads. And I'd explain it doesn't really necessarily work like that. Yes, they'll get more downloads, but it's not going to be the exact same results as when we first published it, because that's the first time our audience saw this app. But then I asked them, well, what if we take that budget, and they're going to pay, I think, like $500. What if we take that $500 and we put it directly into YouTube ads to promote this video? And I was playing around with YouTube ads a little bit. Like at that point, I was doing a couple like small, like kind of channel growth subscriber ads, but I hadn't done it to actually run any like actual promotion. And so they were a little skeptical because all the ads at that time, because this was, well, actually that was in 2015, and it was, but it went spanned from 2015 to 2016. That was like 2015, and there wasn't really a lot of people other than, you know, the big companies like Ford and Geico and stuff running ads on YouTube. Mm. And they had their self-service platform, but it just, not as many people were doing it. They were a little skeptical. I convinced them. We take $500 in 1 week, we get 11,000 users for their app. So they're blown away.
Oh my God.
And then that same company, they had other, so we kept running that promotion into the next year. Then that same company had a few other apps as well. So there was kind of this performance marketing company that was kind of the middle person between it. So they were kind of having me be the influencer before it was a word. You know, they were kind of
performance marketing agency for the app developer company.
Exactly. And so essentially, they had that app that we were promoting, but then they had another app that later became really successful. I can tell you offline what that one was, but that actually turned into a unicorn company, which is pretty cool. A different app, and this was kind of a period of time when they were just blitzing ads on TV and everywhere, and they were doing social media ads. And I didn't do all their YouTube ads. They actually were of the size that they were doing some other like kind of direct ads, but the performance marketing company had hired a bunch of influencers to do dedicated videos. And what I was doing was running those dedicated videos as YouTube ads, right, to then get the signups for that app.
Yeah, and so you were just far outperforming all the other influencers that were working on it.
Exactly, because I was going in and not just promoting my video, but they had big like much larger YouTube influencers, you know, people with millions and millions of subscribers that they had gotten, that I was then running and managing their ads. And, you know, and it was in like couple thousand dollars a day as like the second or third campaign that I had really ran for anybody, but at the same time, it was intuitive to me. I didn't realize, like, now I look back and know that, you know, obviously it was something that I kind of had a feel for and I learned on as I went, but there was no guide at the time I was going through and I was doing it. And the time also with YouTube ads, it wasn't actually optimized based on conversions. I was the algorithm. You had to go in manually and say, okay, this campaign is producing results. This one isn't. Versus now, you know, there's also like an algorithm, of course, that, you know, kind of auto optimizes, which also is one of the things that makes us really good at helping YouTube ads now, is because I understand what the algorithm is doing, because I used to do it manually. Go in and manually say, okay, these, you know, keywords or these audiences that they're performing, these ones aren't. And so essentially that performance marketing company, they call me up. They're like, hey, we want you to drop out of college, fly out here to Silicon Valley, join our team. We're all, you know, like we're all in our 20s. Like you're going to fit right in, you know, six-figure offer options, you know, stock options of capability. And it was really tempting because I was in, you know, if you think about it, right? And like,
were you freshman, 19, 20?
Yeah. And they were 18? They even said, you could keep doing your YouTube channel. Actually, we'd love for you to keep doing your YouTube channel. So they were kind of giving me that
Keys
big,
kingdom,
you know, big opportunity that I probably was, that I was even really kind of almost dreaming about, but with the one catch that I wouldn't be running it and I would be kind of like a knight in their castle and in their army. And I knew that I wanted to be the king of my own castle. I wanted to build my own, like I had that entrepreneurial, you know, element, and I knew that I wanted to build it myself. And so it was really painful to turn it down.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I knew I was making the right decision. And so what I was able to do was I kept running some promotions for them. And then I tapped all of my app developer network. So I had worked with, like I told you, like 300 apps, right? And that time it was less, but maybe like 150, 200 apps or something like that. And so I remember reaching back out to these different developers and saying, hey, I've got something new. I can run YouTube ads. Like even using the same video we did before, I can run these YouTube ads to get more downloads for this app. And I reached out to them and we got about a dozen over time, not all at once, but like about a dozen or so of these app developers to come on as clients to promote their mobile app. And so at the time, this was kind of so I realized I need to create like another company for this. So I created what then became Ad Outreach, but originally it was App Outreach. So it was like YouTube ads for mobile apps. We drove, you know, millions of downloads, wide variety of different applications. And what we were able to do was YouTube ads to drive these mobile app installs.
Yeah. So a boutique YouTube ads agency.
Yeah, exactly. Boutique YouTube ads agency. And I was targeting app developers.
Yeah.
And what happened was in November of 2016. So I've been doing this for the YouTube ad side for probably about a year on the ad side. But I officially kind of had formed the company in the summer of 2016, like more formally. In November of 2016, I went to HubSpot Inbound, like HubSpot's conference. And that's where I saw the ClickFunnels booth. And I remember, and they were still in their early days at that point too.
Yeah.
So I remember meeting, you know, some of the different people there, and actually met the late Dave Woodward there, who's, you know, one of the top people over there before he passed away. And so I was talking with him and with some of these other people, and I said, I'd love to you know, build a funnel. This sounds great. And can I build a funnel with run YouTube ads to a funnel? And so I then had, I signed up for ClickFunnels. I left with a ton of swag and I got back to my college dorm room and I didn't really know what to do next because yes, there was training and I built out a funnel, but I didn't really know all the different nuance and I didn't know how to interconnect it with what I was doing with app developers. And so I found a consultant that was able to help me kind of build out more of a package and more of an offer that would allow me to more of like a package and an offer to be able to promote what I was doing, helping at the time mobile app developers market their app using YouTube ads. And so
the offer was for your agency?
So essentially, yeah, an offer to have my agency at the time come in and do the mobile app marketing. And so essentially, I realized I was doing a ton of things wrong. It's also a good example of it's okay to make mistakes. You're going to learn. And also the importance of having a mentor and a consultant. Because I didn't even know, I hadn't learned how to do, I wasn't, you know, other than, you know, reading some books that talked about ad agencies, I didn't know how to do an ad agency. So I thought you just include the ad spend in the price. And because we were so good at getting this stuff, it's just like, all right, well, you put this money in and I was going to put most of it into ads. Like, it was just funny. Like I didn't know how to charge for anything.
Sure,
and
sure.
I had all these like kind of mistakes, but I was still successful. I knew I had something. And I think that's one valuable lesson anybody who's, you know, watching, like, even if you're making mistakes, use that as a fuel to say, oh, once I learn this, it's going to be a lot better. Yeah. I think some people can look at mistakes and say, oh, I made mistakes. I'm going to kind of like...
They look at the money they lost.
Yeah, and go, oh, yeah, I'm going to go. But those are learning lessons, right? Yeah, they're just... And they're going to get you where you're looking to go. It's like kind of like the tuition, like that you pay to learn how to build this. And so I got these consultants and what they did is they helped me set up an offer. So like what does a retainer look like for this, for the agency side of things? You know, they taught me some of those different elements. They also showed me how I could build a funnel to go from to actually reach new people. Because the problem was at that point, I had already tapped my app developer network. And so I wanted to reach new app developers. And so what I was able to do was create a funnel where it was a webinar funnel. So I made a webinar, made multiple iterations of that. The one that really took off was the 8th iteration of that webinar. So I kept just going and making these evergreen webinars.
They were all evergreen. You never did.
Yeah, actually, yeah, it was funny because I just went straight to evergreen and that was one of the things that they taught too is you know having a webinar that always runs.
Oh, yeah.
And they were kind of, that was relatively new at that time frame too.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you know I didn't really realize it, but the online marketing space was making the shift to evergreen. Like that was like kind of a new thing, and so I came in, you know, with the consultants that were showing me how to do that. And so I made that webinar showing app developers how I could market their mobile app with YouTube ads. And then I learned how to do like an actual like sales call. And
were you doing YouTube traffic to that funnel?
Yes. Okay. So you see where this is going. So they taught Facebook ads to the funnel, but I was like, well, I already know how to do YouTube ads. So I'm just going to do YouTube ads to this funnel.
Yeah.
So I did YouTube ads to the webinar funnel to convert clients. And it worked incredibly well. We got a lot of clients coming in and a lot of people signed up for our webinar and watching our webinar. And this was at a time when, you know, people were starting to see on Facebook that like the show up rates weren't quite as good on webinars. Like, and so I had other people in that mastermind. They were looking at what I was doing. They said, wait a second, how do you do that? And I go, what? YouTube ads. Everybody else here is doing Facebook.
Right.
And the consultants were teaching Facebook and I was getting better results. And then I had somebody say, hey, well, can you just run YouTube ads for me? I'd love to get more people on my webinar.
Yeah, yeah.
So then I started doing at that time as like an agency running YouTube ads for, you know, then more expert-based coaching, consulting, like higher ticket businesses, that's when I realized there's so much more than the app world. And I also really loved the impact of working with, because a lot of these, you know, people that have like coaching and program-based businesses and expert-based businesses, they're going out and they're like helping people in their lives or in their businesses and creating these transformations. And, you know, and there's more things you can do with the ads with higher margins, higher, you know, kind of ticket products. You're relatively limited on apps.
Yeah.
And so I just love that. And so then I started doing YouTube ads for these different businesses and I scaled that up around, you know, like $60,000 a month. And at that point, I realized that, you know, I wanted to impact and work with more people. And I had a decision. I was at like a pivot point. And at that point, I decided to, instead of doing the agency side, actually shut down the agency side and start training businesses on.
So you completely shut it down.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. It was more of a phase out in that, like, I stopped accepting new clients. Honestly, the last client, I think, like, stayed for a whole nother year before. But basically, I turned off, like, the, accepting new clients. And what I did instead was I pivoted over. So it was a smooth transition. It wasn't that, like, abrupt. And then I would recommend a smooth transition in that I knew I could bring in new clients on this other model.
Did you ever think about, like, why didn't I just hire somebody to operate that business and keep it going?
So in hindsight, yes, I do think about that. And it's kind of full circle because now we're at the spot where we're actually adding back in, management for high,
done for you.
Done for you for high level clients. At the same time, I don't know, like, I don't really have regrets in that regard, in that I don't know if I would have achieved the level of scale. So, like, essentially what we were able to do and the level of impact too, because what I was able to do is map out a done together process. Hmm. So it wasn't a course, but it also wasn't an agency. It was a hybrid. And there's more people that do that now, but at the time, not many people were doing that, especially for ads.
Sure.
And so what I was able to do was kind of a done together process where we would help our clients. We'd write their script, right? So we'd do that for them. There's elements we did for them. But then what we would do is we would show them how to set up their campaigns. We'd help them set up, like, guide them through, okay, here's your first campaign. And then we'd help them optimize and help them scale. And so we essentially had our ad strategists, and we had clinics, and we had, going back and forth with support to help them achieve that, those results. And we helped them implement this in their business. Because if they're a smaller business, then the entrepreneur or the operator, they kind of need to be involved in that so they can really understand this important part of their business. That's the lifeblood of their business. So we were training either the entrepreneur or the operator at a small level. And then businesses that were a little bit bigger, maybe they had a marketer, a marketing director, or a media buying team. And we were training those teams and those marketers on our YouTube ad strategy to install it into their business. And that was incredible for those clients. And it was also incredible for us because it allowed us to have more scale faster than maybe an agency would. And that's where, last year we were number, and this actually kind of stretches around this time frame-ish, because we made that shift in 2018. And in 2021, which was, I think, based on the, because it's a 3-year number, so like 2018 to 2021, we were number 87 on the Inc. 5000, fastest growing companies. Last year, number 60 with like 6,052% growth in a 3-year period. And part of that was being able to scale up this model and work with a lot of people. And we just got 1,255. So a little, the growth is not quite as much as what it was. It's 6,000% growth is a lot. And so we built out a lot of different things over this past year. And now we're actually excited because we believe, it's funny because coming full circle, as I get on this podcast, I believe the key to our next level of growth and scale is actually adding in more of the management for higher level clients. And then also in the future, going into potential equity deals with companies that are looking to, really, really grow and have us be a bigger part in it. But I think that, and there's also software I'll talk about later too. So I've got my plan to, build, and I'm not shy about talking about this. I want to build a, billion-dollar, enterprise and overall business. And at the same time, I want to do it the right way and, make sure I'm putting in all the pieces. And it's not for the monetary side. It's, I believe that I can do it and I believe that I can have the impact. And at the same time, I also think even if, somebody's watching this and I don't have, maybe a vision that big yet. I didn't necessarily have that when I started.
Yeah.
I developed vision over time. And the other thing too, is if you ask me, it's like, I can see the $1 billion, like I can see a vision of that. I can also see, I can see the direct path to like more like, like 100, million. And then it's hazier beyond that. But I think that as you go, the next step unlocks you. It's almost like you can a few steps in terms of, all right, that's where I know I want to go. And I know I can get there eventually, but I don't really see the path clearly. And then you can see the clearer path a few steps, like those steps ahead. And you just kind of becomes more apparent as you go forward.
Well, and sometimes you have to, achieve a goal to see that you do want a different goal.
Yes. Yes.
It's like you make the goal is 6 figures at first, and then you make 6 figures and you're like, actually I want 7 figures. Then you don't make 7 figures. You're like, actually I want 8 figures. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And it's not to say that it's, one of those like, well, when's enough type of a thing.
Yeah.
It's just like you reach a goal and then you go like, for you, well, I'm 26. I'm not going to retire.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
It's like, just be stagnant. You're not going to try to get better. You're not like, what are you supposed to do? Yeah, dude. Go for it.
Yeah, exactly. Constantly striving and growing. And I think one thing that I did learn over this last year, and then we'll kind of loop back to you know, kind of where we left off with the journey. But I think this last year, what I learned, though, too, is and there's always been the growth and the constant cycle of like growing and becoming better. I think that that's always been directly tied in the past, before maybe this past year, to like massive increases in terms of like our revenue growth and our numbers and our like, you know, metrics and all that. And this last year, the growth's been a little bit slower than it's been some of the previous years. But we've grown so much as like an actual infrastructure business, building out all the operations, like we grew and scaled so quickly. So even though, you know, we're still growing, but like we're not at the same like, you know, 6,000% growth, sure. You know, in that period of over this past year,
we're a lot more
operationally sound. We're more, you know, we've got more recurring revenue instead of starting each month, like, you know, all right, let's sign more, yeah. you know, deals here.
Let's go hunt.
Let's go hunt. You know, we're starting off at zero and payroll's up here. So let's go. Right. Like now it's like, all right, great. We've got our recurring revenue that covers the expenses and we're going to keep like, you know, and so those are the things that I think are really, are valuable. And I think that was a big lesson I had over this last year that, you know, for people, you know, listening and I think that this also, different people have this at different stages. I happen to see a lot of, you know, growth relatively early on. But I think that what I saw here was this growth in different areas and building out those like the operational areas and even areas that are maybe a little less fun. Because I love the marketing and,
areas, you know, and
ads and also in leading the team. But there's also the operational side and the management side and the people side and all these different elements.
All the stuff you don't think you have to learn.
Yes, but you do. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And also looking at like business models, right? And evolving it over time. So like what gets you, you know, you have to evolve the model to get to six figures and to get to seven figures and to get to eight figures. But then looking beyond that, you have to evolve the model again. That's what I, you know, learned again. So
you have to fortify the enterprise value in the actual business, not just worry about turning and burning revenue.
Revenue is not necessarily growing as quickly as it was before. Although, you know, we're prepping to enter another season of growth with some of the things we're putting in place. The interesting thing is if you look at enterprise value on, you could be 2 to 3 times more valuable when you have recurring revenue versus selling one-off packages.
So you guys are now like for these kind of done with you group coaching things, you're more focused on selling like monthly packages instead of focusing on collecting cash up front.
Exactly.
Dude, I thought I was crazy when I was talking to this guy that was a coach one time. And he was like, he said something about like, I told him, you know, what our numbers were and what we sold that month or whatever. And he was like, it seems like you could be selling a lot more like full pace up front. And I was like, yeah, but I don't want to. I do. I like cash. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. But also I felt like before when I was selling them, it was almost like a cop out in terms of our services because it was like, it only proves one thing. It proves that I can sell a person on the phone. Mm-hmm. It does not prove that person wants to continue buying services from me beyond the initial sale. Whereas if I sell them, I don't make as much money right now. But assuming we do a good job, I will make more money in the long run if I'm doing a good job actually providing a quality product and solving a problem for my customer. Yeah. Right. So it sounds like I'm not the only crazy one. It sounds like you guys are doing the same thing.
Well, exactly.
On a much higher scale than we are, but you're doing the same thing.
Exactly. And part of that too is even when you do knock it out of the park, right, which has been our experience, we re-sign a certain amount of people. There's a certain amount of people that upgrade. The framework, right, with the other side, even if you map everything, you know, perfectly, there are still people that treat it as, okay, I bought this thing and now you're selling another thing. Even when you have gotten a really great result for them, the expectation is set wrong when it's seen as an individual package. And then you try and sell them on another package. And again, like we did this to a very, very high degree with a very high success rate with our clients. Mm-hmm. The thing though that is different is when you go for that upgrade conversation, like they're treating it as I bought a 6 month or a 3 month thing or even a year thing or whatever it is. And I've seen that to completion, especially when you're training somebody. And so you're having another decision and just naturally, some people are going to say, well, I might not want to buy again. Thank you so much. I'm going to do a testimonial. This was great.
Yep.
You can use me as a case study, you know, and that's always really good. And I'll refer people to you. And that really helped our business grow. But what I realized is we were potentially leaving, like, you know, why would someone who's a raving fan not continue? And it's because we were framing it even from the beginning. The way you frame it at the beginning
is that there's a starting
the wrong way
ending.
Is that we're going to install this into your business. There's an end date. And of course, you know, many people were upgrading, But there was, you know, the majority of people on that model that weren't upgrading,
yeah.
even when they were like, yeah, I'll do a great testimonial, I'll refer people. And it's just different when you add yourself to their business and you add yourself in a recurring fashion to say, we want to work with you long term.
We're a line item in your P&L.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the other thing too is adding other elements in. So for a long time, we were YouTube ads, just YouTube ads. And so what we realized is we need to help them with their funnel. We have our video conversion funnel, right? So go from YouTube ad to, you know, our version of a VSL funnel. We can help them design that, right? There's other elements around their YouTube channel. So I went out and found one of the top like YouTube channel growth experts that was doing like individual consulting, you know, reached out to him. What would it take to, join our team and brought him in. And so now he helps like YouTube channel growth and our clients. So that's another thing. It's like, oh, you got the YouTube ads, now it's YouTube channel growth. Omnipresent retargeting. You can now retarget. So now we create this process. And instead of upselling people to say, hey, I need to now have another sales conversation with a client that I've already sold in this initial package to sell them on another package to say, now I'm selling them on omnipresent retargeting their YouTube channel. It's totally different than you have a certain initial minimum commitment or whatever commitment, like a monthly. The way we do it is it's monthly, but there's this initial minimum commitment. And then after that, it's month
minimum
to month.
In terms of the term.
Yeah, a certain amount of months to start, you know, just because we know there's a lot of stuff that's front loaded and, and also time that they need to, to implement and see those results. But beyond that, then it's month to month, you know, and it's part of what you said is like we constantly re-earning, ensuring like we already. Client success is one of our biggest like pillars, and we already had set the bar high in ourselves. We're like, we're setting that even higher. And so that's a big part of it. But also we're adding more things that we know that they need and making a progression saying, oh, now you're ready to start focusing on your YouTube channel, YouTube channel incubator, right? You can, incubate these clients. You have ads bringing people in, but you want to have a channel that people can go and watch. Let's do omnipresent retargeting. You have all these leads. And you want to warm them up, just like popcorn. You know, if you warm them up over time, they're going to convert and pop. You know,
yeah.
And essentially, adding these different elements, and we actually have more planned. We actually have I've got a roadmap in my head of what we're doing to further add to our client journey.
Yeah.
And client roadmap
to make the recurring more valuable.
So exactly, and provide more value to our clients. And do that while still supporting them in our core area, which is the YouTube ads.
Yeah, you know what's interesting, man, is like looking at when success leaves clues. You know, when you look at like the biggest companies, they are all obsessed with that.
Yeah.
They're more obsessed with recurring than they are like selling large upfront contracts. Mm-hmm. And the first time I realized this, so I come from door-to-door sales. I did like 6 years of door-to-door back in the day, and I sold solar and I sold alarms and I sold water purification. But when I was selling alarms, it was really when I realized this, because we would sell, 2, 3, 5 year contracts. Those were the options of the term, 2, 3, or 5. Mm-hmm. And when I was selling, I was always doing the math of my commission in my head. I was a 100% commission sales rep, you know what I mean? So if I raised the MRR, I would get a bump of my commission. If I gave away less equipment, I'd get a bump of my commission. So I had all these ways to manipulate how much I was going to get paid on the deal. And I remember the first time this guy offered to pay the whole contract up front. And I was like, oh, sweet. Like, this should be able to get me a couple extra multiples on my commission, you know? So I called the office and I'm like, hey, this guy wants to pay the whole contract up front. You know, what does that do to my commission? They're like, oh, it actually is a penalty on your commission. I was like, what? What are you talking about? It's a penalty on my commission. He's going to pay, like, instead of $50, he's going to give us $50 times 36. You know what I mean? It's $2,000. Like, how does this make me less money?
Yeah.
But it was because the monitoring stations that were purchasing the contracts from us as a dealership know from decades of data that the person's more likely to continue paying if they do it every single month. They get in the habit of paying that bill because it's a bill. And that bill, like, they're buying the 3-year contract from us and paying more than the contract is worth. So like, they would pay the dealership more than the contract was actually worth for the contract, because they know this person on average will stick with them for 7, 8, 9 years, assuming that it's a service that they actually find value in. But they would actually discount the rate that they would pay on the contract if it was paid up front, because then they have to do the work of making sure that they go in and start recurring billing after the contract was over. And it was like one of the first times I was like, that's crazy to me that, but it's what these massive companies that have, you know, hundreds of millions or billions of funding are doing, because they understand that it's not about the initial transaction. You know what I mean? It's about how long can you keep this customer happy, satisfied? How good are you at solving this problem for them? And is it painful enough for them to continue parting with money every month and making you a part of their, like we're talking about, like they're just in, it's in the line item. It's in the budget now. You know, it's like Netflix. It's like Netflix is just, it's in the budget. You know what I mean? Like they can raise it from 16 to 18, doesn't matter. Still going to pay the extra $2. Like it's in the budget now. Like, I don't know what to tell you. You know what I mean? So if you become a part of somebody's budget, so much more effective than like trying, than selling one product one time and then also having to get back on the phone to try to sell another product a second time when they don't even really believe that they need that product. You know what I mean? And maybe they had a bad experience because you're so focused on sales and not focused enough on product or customer experience that like the set, the, when the second sales conversation comes around, they're actually like, ah, actually, you know, we're okay.
Yeah.
Because we haven't heard from you in 4 months. And this is the first time we heard from you and you're just trying to sell us something else now, you know?
Or even when they have a great experience, it was actually really interesting because I studied this and looked at this and I don't think I've really discussed this on a podcast. This is like, you know, but even when, so it's actually the interesting thing is when their experience is really, really, is really solid, but also there's still like new challenges that come up that we help them solve the new, like, so essentially people that perform extremely well, sometimes they looked at it as this did amazing. Check the box, solved all my problems. I don't need you anymore. Even if we do know that they're going to perform better by working with us longer term. And then it's like, oh, well, you know, now we can help. Now it becomes a sale on, okay, well, we got omnipresent retargeting. We've got YouTube channels. Like, well, this is working so well.
Yeah.
I'm going to go, you know, now I need help with like my sales. I'm going to go hire like a sales, you know, trainer or whatever. And use that budget. And also, because we're now, we were also not selling a recurring thing. We were selling another package that maybe was higher and a pay us now or over one or two payments instead of, you know, over whatever the year that, that, or 6 months to a year that we were selling. And so ultimately is really interesting in that there was almost this area, and you could even look at it, and this is one of the realizations that I had had of people that are getting strong results. And there's also just inside of their business, things that pop up that we're constantly helping like solve for them. So like some clients that like, when you think about ads with like YouTube ads, right? We have clients that just hop in and they're just, their campaigns just like work and just take off. And at that point in the past, those would be clients you would think would be the no-brainer ones to upgrade. That said, their experience sometimes is the ads works incredibly well. You guys did amazing. I'm doing a testimonial. We don't need you anymore. We got this. And it's also kind of slightly hard to argue with that. The counter side, though, is the fact that we do know over time, even if they have it, it's going to degrade slightly over time. Also, the platform changes. We're constantly, we got our finger on the pulse of the platform. And so actually, the interesting thing is a lot of those people reach back out. Like last year, YouTube made a major shift away from content targeting. I know we're not getting too deep into the weeds here, but they shifted over to audience-based targeting. And that's something that we saw coming. We built a software that actually targets audiences and things like that on YouTube. And so we were ahead of the curve, and we actually had a lot of those, you know, people reach out that,
come back in.
And I actually did a full like webinar. Like I did a past client webinar. It's like, hey, like, even if you don't come in as clients, I want to show you, here's how to transition your campaigns over. Cause I want to do that too. I want to like, you know, help, like, even if you don't, like, let me show you how this works. And of course, it's something you learn as a business owner, as you go over time, it's like, you provide a lot of value, and that's actually just going to win for everybody.
Yeah, totally.
Right?
Well, because they're going to look how complicated that is and just go, nah.
Yeah, they're like, yeah, yeah,
I'd rather
yeah.
you do this.
Yeah, yeah. Or the people that do implement it, and they're like, wow, you actually just gave me, you know, you could have just said, hey, go, you know, buy my thing again, but you just gave me an update on how this works.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm going to go now tell people, like, Alex Grady takes care of, like, past clients. Somebody came in 3 years ago. Yeah, it's like, hey, hop on this live webinar. I'm going to show you these big shifts that are happening. But it's really interesting because it's not how it should have been in that, like, people that get those breakout results, they're the ones thinking about it. It's like, you want to create a situation where they don't think about it, right? Where they're just in that background and you can help work with them consistently. And because you know that's ultimately what's best for them too. Because I know that even if they feel like they've got it, something's going to happen over time where, you know, they're going to need our help, and we want to make sure that we're there to support them.
Yeah.
And we have other things that we're adding in. So the YouTube channel, the omnipresent retargeting, supporting them and in those different areas in their business, and even just business growth elements for, especially for like expert-based business, because we've seen that, we've seen the challenges, we can support them. And I think the big thing on your side, it was never the results were always like really like people, you know, go in and implement the strategy and the process just because it's so meticulous that we have. That was never the challenge. I think the thing that we learned as we switched over to recurring, just how many touch points you need to have, even as people are doing really well. So they need to know that you care and you're there to help identify and almost anticipate like even these quote unquote good problems to have. Like, hey, you might fill up your calendar so much that like you now need salespeople and let me connect you over here with somebody that can like help with that. Or you might have a situation where you're now facing fulfillment problems of your own because you have a lot of these clients that are coming through. Here's like what we recommend to be able to like look at these different things. And so I think that it's also getting into consulting too. And just over time, you know, you have to start very kind of niche down and this is what you do. But over time, what you realize is you want to, if you want to work with a client long-term, there's other things that they're going to need. There's other people you need to hire on your team to make yourself more well-rounded and robust if you want those long-term clients. And if you want to really support those clients at a high level, because it's not just that one thing like YouTube ads, it's a lot more than just the ads.
So let's talk about YouTube organic then, because I think that's something that really widely applies to a lot of the audience here. A lot of creators that listen, podcasters, people who have stuff on YouTube, including us, that we're trying to always get better on YouTube. I told you at the beginning of this conversation before we hit record that we made the mistake of waiting to get on YouTube until the beginning of this year. And so there's things that we're trying to figure out.
Yeah.
I'm curious how paid and organic work together and if it works at all. And then I want to talk to you about the new YouTube Boost program that's seemingly coming out now on select channels where you can actually boost, because to my knowledge, before this boost feature came out, it could actually be bad for your channel if you ran YouTube ad traffic to the channel to boost subscribers or views. Is that right or is that wrong?
So it's a nuanced answer. It's right if you do it the wrong way.
Okay.
So you can harm your channel. So it's actually really interesting because YouTube's now rolling out the boost feature, which does what we have actually been doing for quite some time to help with organic YouTube channel growth with what are called in-feed ads. So there's two main types of YouTube ads that I think is going to be valuable for people watching. So essentially, these two main types. So one is the classic YouTube ad that you're familiar with, in-stream ads. Those appear in front of other videos, drive off conversions. That's also a lot of what we're talking about here. A lot of, you know, the clients that we bring in, they're looking for in-stream ads. They want people to sign up. They want leads. They want book calls, you know, sales, whatever it happens to be. So those are the classic ads. But there's also these in-feed ads, and these appear in search results alongside suggested videos as, you know, the watch next video on the YouTube homepage, on the app as you're scrolling. They pop up and they have the little like yellow like ad thing next to them. And so those are in-feed ads. Those ads are essentially what the Boost program is doing. And you actually were able to manually set those up to drive new traffic and subscribers and actually help grow your channel if you set them up the right way. What people were doing and why this YouTube ads to grow your channel got, or YouTube ads can actually harm your channel, got popularized is because people were doing these in-stream ads, the videos that are skippable, like the in-stream ads that play before other videos. They were running those as ads to try and grow their channel. Maybe they had the call to action be to subscribe. The problem is YouTube cares about watch time.
Watch time. Yeah.
What do those videos let you do?
Gotcha.
They let you skip.
Skip, yeah.
So how long is the watch time? Well, the watch time is usually, you know, I mean, it depends on how long the video is, but usually sub 1 minute, which can really harm your channel.
Yeah.
And so essentially, what you don't want to do is run a public YouTube video as an in-stream ad. Some people also get paranoid about running videos that they have on their YouTube channel as ads because they think that's going to harm their channel. Only if it's public. If it's unlisted, it's not going to harm your watch time stats.
Gotcha.
But if it's a public video where, you know, it's available to the public, that video can harm your watch time stats if you run that as an ad. So you want to run these in-stream ads from unlisted videos, and those drive off platform. If you want your YouTube channel to grow, what you need are these in-feed ads instead.
Okay.
And what these do is they simulate discovering your content naturally.
Got it.
And so that's also why I say
you have to... giving you an increased chance of impressions and click-throughs to the video itself.
Exactly. Now, the reason that I say that you have to do it right for it to help your channel is it's just like organic content.
Yeah.
If you post bad videos,
if your shit sucks, it's not going to make
it better. Or you clickbait, yeah. Then your watch time is going to go down and it's not going to work. And so it's the same thing with in-feed videos, is that you could do it wrong and your watch time could be, but you can also monitor all those metrics.
So theoretically, if you want to do it the right way, you would, in my brain anyway, this is how and this is kind of what I've been talking to my team about doing with some of our bigger podcast interviews, was like, well, what if we just let the algorithm do its thing for like 30 days and see which ones have the highest click-through rate, which ones have the highest watch time, and then just boost those ones, basically.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. What I will say, though, is what you may want to consider is, and this is something that we train our clients in. And at some point, I might need to do, because I obviously have a lot of webinars and trainings and things. I might need to do like a public training. So that actually puts a thought in my mind, especially now with the boost coming out, is like showing people how to do a better way of doing it. But basically,
be a good time to hop on that trend.
Yeah, exactly. So that, you're making me think of that right now. But one of the things that we do with our clients, and of course, have our client trainings and strategies. But essentially, what we do is we have them do exactly that. They look at, what are your best watch time videos? What are the videos that are, if you're tracking clicks, like UTMs and stuff, you can see, okay, what are the videos that are producing, conversions? What are videos that are getting more subscribers, right? So let's look at all those things and say, okay, these are your top performing videos that have high watch time, high retention. They're causing conversions, causing subscribers. Let's take that video. And with what you're saying, the basic version would be to boost. That didn't used to exist, but now it does. But there's an advanced version. The problem with boosting it is, and you've probably seen this, there's really no targeting, right? It's like, it's just kind of, okay, you want to reach people that are similar to those who are already watching the videos, which is better than, honestly, it kind of just creates a lookalike audience, which is better than no targeting. Because if you set up a Google ad with no targeting, then there really is no targeting.
Basically, the boost feature is like YouTube ads for dummies.
Yeah. And it's like a lookalike. It's kind of similar to like a Facebook boost.
Sure.
But there's a way to go in and target those in-feed ads to your ideal clients or your ideal audience on YouTube in the Google Ads platform on YouTube. And so what you can do, and this is also used to be the only way before the boost feature was there. So what you would do is you would go into your YouTube Ads platform and you'd build out this in-feed audience. And you can still, with that, do content targeting. So keywords they might search on YouTube. You can also do audience-based targeting. So, things they've either searched on Google or YouTube, interests that they have. Mm. And you can basically target people that might be looking up, networking or guests of the podcast.
Grant Cardone podcast.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. And then what you would do is you would be able to appear right there at the top for those searches. Versus even if you take that, like a Grant Cardone, interview that you've done and you boost it, it may or may not go to people searching that because YouTube's just kind of going to do a similar based audience. Versus you can actually say, I want to reach people that are searching, his name on YouTube or people who have an interest in him based on a YouTube, like a
variety
audience.
Of searches,
exactly. And so what you can do is target that. And the other thing is you can also add in, other demographic based targeting, household income. They have some demographics actually, I think, in the boost feature, but you can get more granular with it.
Sure.
And because you're doing this inside of Google Ads, you can actually split test different headlines, and so basically you can kind of change the headline and stuff. But what you can also do is you can see what conversions you get on the back end. There's just a lot more stats. So you can actually say, okay, am I actually getting view through conversions of people going to my site and doing this? You can, and the boost will show you your subscribers. It'll show you things around watch time, but this will just give you a lot more.
Sure.
So it's more targeted and gives you more analytics. That said, Boost is a good place to start. The other thing that I found too is if you know how to target the right way, you can actually get views cheaper than Boost. With Boost, also, they just kind of give you an estimate of how much you'll pay per view. With Google Ads, you can actually just set up a CPV, so a bid, per view that you want to pay.
Yeah.
Typically, though, what we found is the cost per view on these in-feed ads compared with an in-stream, the ads appear in front of other videos, is like a fifth the cost.
Oh, wow.
And so you can really get a lot of people coming in. And that's for the same targeting. You could do the same targeting, right? Top 10% income earners, top 20%. Like this type of stuff that we might do, right? That might not be for you, but... And people who are, have a business, trying to figure out how to market, we can reach those people at a fraction of the cost.
Got it.
And then they go into the ecosystem. We can see how many subscribe, how many click off to our site, and all that.
What are some of the, I guess, red flags that exist in that space? So like, there's all these click farms and websites to buy subscribers and buy views and all these things, and none of them ever work, right? Because you always have to, like, you're always going to have to keep up the pretense.
Yeah.
So you'll never get off the hamster wheel of continuing to buy more and more and more stuff, and it'll never get shown organically. It'll never build a real audience. Yeah. But I see people do it all the time where people, they'll go buy, like, oh, I bought this channel that came with 150,000 subscribers. It's like, okay, but there's no videos. They don't know who you are. Like, it makes you look like you have a decent channel, but then if you have 100,000 subscribers and you upload a video and it gets 200 views, well, that doesn't look good either. So now you got to like go buy fake views, and now your video has 89,000 views on it, but like 88.8 of those 1,000 of those views are all fake and there's nobody actually watching it. Yeah. What are the dangers of doing that kind of stuff with your channel?
It harms the watch time, and also YouTube knows. And I think that it's interesting, like, they'll count those as views, which is kind of interesting. And it's also probably a game of cat and mouse, too, because everyone's still watching. Like, in the past, they used to really be fighting against it. So there was times when, like, so-and-so got XYZ subscribers removed because, you know, YouTube cracked down. I think they care about it less now, but the algorithm knows. I think they also know that, like, people are playing that game. Like, the algorithm's smarter than it.
Right.
So there was a time when the algorithm wasn't quite as smart as it. So YouTube would actually crack down. They would reduce view counts. They would decrease subscriber counts, and they might still do that. I don't know, but I have heard like less of, you know, because less that's been potentially happening. But those channels, they're just not going to get the traction because the algorithm is smarter than that.
Yeah.
And so essentially, the algorithm is really focused on real user watch time, retention, what are real users doing? And that's also why the in-stream ads, like, even though you're reaching real users, you're reaching them in a different way where they're going to skip the ad. Those you don't want to run to public videos. But with in-feed ads, it's basically, it's whether you do boost or you do the in-feed ad. And also the boost is YouTube confirming what I've been saying. Because I actually had a kind of a little bit of a debate back and forth. I was at a mastermind with somebody who's like a big like YouTube organic person who's great at YouTube organic. And he was saying, absolutely never run YouTube ads to promote any video. And I was saying, well, you know, here's where we agree, but also here's where we disagree with these in-feed ads, right? You can run in-feed ads, and then it's just amplifying what your video would do already. And we've seen across clients, right? It's like, as long as you have your watch time be strong there and you got to monitor that, then it's going to help it. So it's just amplifying the number of impressions you can get.
Sure.
And then it's up to the video's merits how that's going to help or harm your channel, which is why the easiest way is just take your best video. But YouTube releasing this boost feature is actually kind of... is YouTube signing off on what I've said historically, because it is that feature.
It's that was the, kind of the allowed.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, we're not going to derank you if you do this type of advertising here.
And it's specifically the in-feed ads, because, you know, it's kind of like Google search ads, right? It's, you're just peering higher in search. But then, you know, where you rank organically is going to depend on how your page does. So you can still do the ads.
Can't promote dog shit and expect it to perform.
Yeah. Exactly. And so that's the thing. I think, though, YouTube probably should, like, I do think that they should, especially as they're getting more people going into it, do something to either prevent or, like, the algorithm issues that happen from an in-stream video being run as an ad. Because I think that even though we know that you shouldn't do that, I think that that does scare some people away because they've heard that, right?
Sure.
And I've heard that a lot, and
I
have to tell people.
That's why I never did it, because I didn't want to do any of the fake stuff. You know, I wanted to grow because we're getting people that actually want to watch our freaking content.
Yeah.
So I didn't touch any of that stuff because I'd always heard really bad things about it.
Yeah.
But then, like I said, I saw that boost feature came out, and I was like, ooh, that sounds like I said, it's like they're endorsing it now. Like, it seems like it's okay, at least. So that's why I wanted to talk to you about it for sure.
Yeah.
So I appreciate your insight on that.
Yeah.
Well, listen, dude, this has been an awesome conversation, fascinating stuff. I think people, whether they're a business owner, they're a content creator, there's something they can take away from this. So I appreciate you coming on the show. Talk to me about what you got going on now. What's next for you?
Yeah. What I've been really focusing on, in addition to ad outreach and everything we do, you know, helping business with YouTube ads, is we also have keyword search, which is our, you know, YouTube audience keyword research tool.
Okay.
People go in and they can just describe details about their business, and they click a button, generate audiences. And we've been developing this for the last 2 years.
Okay.
So we added more AI features over the last, you know, 6 months since like AI really rolled out. But we've been developing this for the last 2 years. Essentially, originally it was just for clients. Now it's available more publicly. But What it does is you just describe your business, click generate audiences, and it'll give you all of the different audiences that you should target based on what your business does and based on what we know works on YouTube, all in one place. You just select the ones that you want, click sync to Google Ads, and in just a couple clicks, you can actually sync full-built YouTube ad audiences directly to Google that you can run your ads to. And it's the same type of audiences that we would manually create in a fraction of the time.
That's awesome, dude. Yeah. Awesome. Before we sign off, where can people go follow you, learn more about you, get some of the free value that you always are?
Yeah. So I actually have a gift for anybody who's watching or listening. I have my full 90-page YouTube ad strategy PDF. Walks through step by step. There's no fluff in there. It shows you exactly how it works, how to script an ad, how to target the ad, the whole process. You can go to adoutreach.com/gift. That's adoutreach.com/gift. And you'll be able to get that full 19-page PDF. I also have, you know, a lot of my social media links on adoutreach.com and also just alric.com as well.
adoutreach.com/gift. Go pick it up right now before you forget. And maybe in the future, you'll see another gift there based on what we talked about today.
Exactly.
About how to grow your channel
with
YouTube ads now that they're allowing it or seemingly more okay with
exactly.
it. Well, dude, thanks so much for coming on. Appreciate your time and look forward next time we get to hang.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
That's it for today's episode. Thanks for spending some time with me and my friends. If you want to be better friends with me, then head over to travischappell.com/team to subscribe to my free newsletter, Your Friend Travis, where I share what's on my mind about life, building a business, raising kids, being married, and anything else I would normally share with my close circle of friends. That's travischappell.com/team. And my biggest ask of you, since I'm sharing my friends with you, is to share this episode with a friend of yours that hasn't listened to the show yet. Then leave us a quick 5-star rating in Apple Podcasts and in Spotify. It would mean the world to us as it helps us make sure that this show continues to be more valuable to you. Thanks in advance, and I'll catch you on the next episode.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Save big money on your outdoor project now at Menards. We have everything you need to keep your outdoor power equipment running smooth, so you can keep that lawn in tip-top shape or enjoy some time on your boat. Right now, all FVP, lawn and garden, and marine batteries are on sale through May 5th. Check out our entire selection of FVP batteries today and view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals. Save